Welcome to One Health Wednesdays. This podcast aims to promote the principles of One Health and encourage professional development. Here's your host, Ginger Dixon.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to One Health Wednesdays, a collaboration between LabOp Global and One Life Epi Solutions. I'm Ginger Dixon, and I'd like to introduce our guest today, Dr. Neil Vora. Neil, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, thank you. We're excited to have you on. You are a pandemic prevention fellow at Conservation International. I understand you also work as faculty at Columbia University as an adjunct professor there. And then you still managed to see patients at a tuberculosis clinic there in New York. And so we're excited to learn more about your background and experiences today.
Yeah, I'm so lucky I get to do all this work. I'm living a childhood dream, like my own childhood dream. So it's very fortunate that I get to do this.
That's wonderful. And it's so exciting. We've had a couple of guests share that as well, that, you know, they get to live out their dreams as they're a child. And it's so exciting to see people bring that longstanding passion into what they do. So very cool to hear that.
Thank you.
Yeah. And so tell us about your work that you do now with Conservation International.
I work with a range of amazing colleagues, and we're some from Conservation International, some from other organizations, both environmental organizations and also health-focused organizations. And we're working together to advocate for policies to prevent pandemics before they even start. You know, sadly, COVID is not a once-in-a-century event. We've had at least five other pandemics in the past 100 and some years. So that's on average one pandemic every 15 to 20 years. And in total, these pandemics have killed over 70 million people. So we are in an age of pandemics, and this risk is only growing because of the ongoing destruction of nature. And so I work with colleagues to try to prevent pandemics before they even start by advocating for adoption of policies that would do exactly that.
That's fantastic. And I can say personally, that's one of my primary takeaways as well from, you know, this One Health philosophy, is that we're really seeing this increased risk because of these unhealthy interactions with nature, you know, and what's occurring in our environment. And so that's really important that y'all are tackling this at the policy level. What are some of the current challenges that y'all are working to address through policy work?
You know, for me, the light bulb that went off in my head was back in, I think, 2007 or 8. I'm forgetting the exact year, but a paper was published in Nature. And, you know, when I was an undergraduate, I used to do marine biology research. But then I ended up going to med school. And so I was taking an extra year during med school. I was spending most of that year in Uganda doing HIV and malaria research. I was already leaning towards a career in infectious diseases. And then out of the blue, one day, my former research mentor from my marine biology work emails me about this paper that had just been published in Nature. And it looked at emerging infectious diseases and the origins of these infectious diseases. And it showed that most emerging infectious diseases originate in animals and then spill over into people. And that, you know, when I read that paper, a light bulb went off in my head, because I was trying through my medical career to connect human health and public health to environmental conservation. But I, you know, at that stage in my training and education, I just didn't know exactly how to do that. But when I read that paper, it all came into focus for me. Most new infectious diseases and emerging infectious diseases originate in animals, and they are increasingly spilling over into to people because of human activities that place people in close contact with domestic animals and wildlife that creates opportunities for these pathogens to jump across species. And so the policies that my colleagues and I work to try to get adopted are policies that would limit opportunities for those spillovers. And many of these policies carry massive return on investment because it's much cheaper to prevent a pandemic than to wait to respond to it. And economics aside, more importantly, you save millions of lives in the process. And at the same time, many of these actions to prevent spillover also mitigate climate change and help to address the sixth mass extinction that we are currently in the midst of. So, the way I see it is that it is a win-win-win. When you invest in pandemic prevention, you're getting these wins across the board, and it is sensible policy that we in the United States and globally need to be investing in.
Definitely, definitely. And you bring up some excellent points, and I've seen similar literature that says exactly what you're saying, you know, that the majority of these emerging diseases are coming from spillover events. And yes, economically, it makes much more sense to try to prevent the astronomical costs like we saw with COVID for the next pandemic. And so, definitely excellent work and excellent points here. And you mentioned the sixth mass extinction. So do you mind to speak to that a little bit more for our listeners?
You know, I can only cover this at a very high level because it's not my area of expertise, but there have been prior mass extinctions before the arrival of humans on the planet. But now we are in what some are calling a new geologic epoch called the Anthropocene, in which humans are the dominant forces, affecting life on this planet and conditions on this planet. And these human activities, such as in the form of habitat destruction, are leading to massive losses in all types of forms of life, including extinction of species. Now, you know, some people have a view that humans, like what happens in nature doesn't affect humans, but that is far from the truth. In fact, humans are a part of nature. Everything we need to survive ultimately comes from nature. And part of that, part of our survival also depends on biodiversity. And so, you know, with this loss of species, we are adversely affecting our own well-being in numerous ways, not just from an infectious disease perspective, but from many other ways. And so this is a catastrophic threat that we face right now. It is an existential threat, and we must do more as a global society to address this sixth mass extinction.
Yes, definitely. And I love these terms that you've used, it is an existential threat, you know, and we are a global society that we, you know, now have the power and the tools to address these situations. And so, well put.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, and this may not be an easy question to answer, but just in your opinion, what are some of the most pressing threats of spillover that we're seeing right now?
You know, one of the biggest drivers of spillover is land use change, by which I mean conversion of habitats, and particularly in the form of deforestation or clearing and degradation of tropical forest and subtropical forests. And how that leads to spillover is through several mechanisms. First of all, you know, as forests are degraded, as they are cleared, it creates this forest edge that allows people and communities to increasingly interact with the forest. And in these forests, there is wildlife. And so through those interactions, there are opportunities for pathogens in these animals, in the wildlife, to then jump over into people. So that's one very high level reason why deforestation can lead to spillover events. Another reason why deforestation leads to spillover is that when forests are lost and cleared, the species that are left behind tend to be species and groups of animals that can live alongside humans, groups of animals such as bats and rodents. And these are the same animals that are known reservoirs for a variety of viruses that can infect people. Viruses such as Ebola virus or pox viruses and others as well. Whereas, you know, the species that are more likely to disappear through that process of deforestation are species that are specialized to live in a very niche set of circumstances, particularly within a forest ecosystem, as opposed to living alongside people. And so, again, that loss of biodiversity through deforestation actually increases the risk of spillover. So, you know, one message that I think is really important is that it is not biodiversity that leads to infectious disease emergence. Rather, it is the process that humans are responsible for that leads to loss of biodiversity that creates conditions for spillover to take place. So that's just one broad set of, you know, one broad category of human activity that leads to spillover risk, right? Just when I say land use change in the form of deforestation. But another example are wildlife markets and trade, both legal and illegal markets and trade. And this has been shown to have played a role in the emergence of monkeypox in the United States back in 2003, or in the SARS outbreak from 2002 to 2003, or also almost certainly for the current pandemic that we are in the midst of, COVID. There's a lot of evidence now that strongly suggests that the most likely cause of the current pandemic was related to the movement of wildlife for commercial markets and trade, right? So that's just another example. There's also another driver, which is unsafe practices when raising farmed animals. And of course, there's climate change in the backdrop of all of this that is increasing the risk of pandemics.
Yeah, and you definitely touched on some good points there. I'm curious with, you know, it's interesting, we talk about bats and rodents as known reservoirs for some of these potentially zoonotic diseases and zoonotic diseases that can cross over from animals into humans. Do you feel like it's their that capability to live alongside humans that makes them such excellent reservoirs for these zoonotic diseases? Or do you feel like maybe there's other factors there? And again, maybe not a question that's easy to answer. Just curious.
Yeah, I don't think it's an easy to answer question. I think that there's a variety of factors that contribute to the ability of bats, for example, for the ability of bats to harbor these viruses, and not all of these viruses cause disease in bats in the same way that they do in humans, right? So bats have different immune systems and different susceptibilities to illness than humans do. So, you know, it's hard to pinpoint exactly why bats and rodents, for example, do have a diversity of pathogens that can then end up infecting people. But the bottom line is that part of our efforts right now to address our to address the threat of pandemics must entail addressing these upstream factors that lead to spillover. This is an issue of equity, right? You know, if we just wait for pandemics to happen and then put band-aids on it or try to then implement control measures and other measures to blunt our vulnerability to those pandemics, we are going to always have an inequitable set of outcomes from such an approach. In contrast, when we prevent pandemics in the first place, everyone benefits, particularly people in some of the most resource-limited settings of the world. And, you know, part of the reason I'm saying, you know, driving home this equity point is that we have seen so much inequity over the last 2.5, almost 3 years now with regards to the response to COVID, both in the United States and also internationally. But we've seen the same thing with monkeypox, where there has been an outbreak of monkeypox in Nigeria since 2017, but Nigeria has had such limited access to monkeypox vaccines. And so my concern is that if we continue to wait for outbreaks, epidemics, and pandemics to happen, rather than trying to prevent them in the first place, we're going to continue to have inequitable outcomes, which is just not right.
Yeah, thank you. And thank you for bringing up that point. Yes, this is not just a health issue or an environmental issue. It's also very much an equity issue. And I can certainly speak to what you're saying, that, you know, that we saw a lot of inequity with resources and responses to COVID. And we certainly don't want to continue to expand those gaps in the future.
It's really unfortunate, right? We've seen millions of people die from COVID, and you know, when you compare the official death count to what is probably more realistic, which is the excess number of deaths over the last 2.5 years, it's just astronomical numbers of people who died. And I, you know, reflect back on my own experience here in New York City back in 2020 when I was still with the CDC. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. And I had the great privilege of leading New York City's COVID contact tracing program. But there was a time during the first wave of COVID in New York City back in, must have been March and April of 2020, when you were just hearing sirens go off nonstop in the city, right? Ambulances. And just people were dying. So there's so many deaths happening in New York City and so much illness. It was a horrible, horrible situation.
Yeah. I can imagine, especially being acutely aware of it as you were, you know, doing that work and working right in the midst of the contact tracing and COVID prevention like you were in. And I had read that you led a team of, it was over 1,000 contact tracers in an effort to work with New York City to do COVID mitigation. That's impressive.
It was probably more like over 3,500 contact tracers at the peak of our effort. So it was a very big team. But I worked alongside some of the most amazing public servants. And these are people who work tirelessly behind the scenes because they are so driven by mission. And I'm forever grateful to these people. It was a very, very challenging task that we had ahead of us. But these people rose to the occasion because they're so committed to the cause. So I have the deepest respect for the public health workers and clinical workers who have worked so hard for the last 3 years. And it's, you know, they are still engaged in their work despite threats that they've been facing, you know, not just verbal threats, but physical threats. And a lot of the anti-science movement, it is challenging for them to work under such conditions. They are exhausted, yet they keep doing what they do. And there's, you know, just when you're out of the acute phase of COVID, we're not out of COVID, but we're out of the acute phase, then there is another threat that pops up, which is monkeypox. Or right now we have, right now there is an outbreak of Ebola in Uganda, right? It's just nonstop. We are now in the pandemicine, as some people have called it. We are in an age of pandemics, epidemics and pandemics. And this is a huge threat to everyone. If we don't invest in public health infrastructure and public health workforce, we are all going to suffer for it.
Yeah. And I really appreciate you bringing up, you know, the people that you've worked alongside that are working on this, and honoring them and recognizing that, you know, that our job is not over. We have, we have these future events, new emerging events like monkeypox and Ebola, re-emerging events like Ebola. And, and that we need to really change how we're navigating moving forward. And I'm curious, so I know, I think we can take away that one of your insights from your past work working with Ebola and other pox viruses would be that, you know, prevention is the best medicine rather than mitigation. But are there any other lessons from your work when you were deployed to the Democratic Republic of Congo working on Ebola or with working on pox viruses in Georgia that you'd like to share?
I'll start by saying that the work I did in West and Central Africa for the two biggest Ebola outbreaks ever, first of all, was a privilege of a lifetime to get to support those responses. But again, you know, my work over there just underscores what I also saw in COVID, that healthcare workers and public health workers are an underappreciated group of experts in our society. They work so hard at risk to their own well-being. You know, when I was in the Congo in 2019, the focus of my work was on infection prevention and control. And there's just such a high risk of a healthcare worker getting sick when working with Ebola patients or in a healthcare facility in general. And these are people who work for so little pay often, and with such scarce resources. I remember I took a picture in the Congo of individuals washing disposable face masks so that they could be reused for patients. And that is, when you're dealing with Ebola patients or you're in the midst of an outbreak, you don't want to be worried that your equipment is going to fail. And you don't want to worry about running out of gloves overnight, which is, again, what I observed in Liberia. But the other lesson is that what I observed in Liberia and in the Congo with regards to Ebola was not unique. We experienced the same shortages and the same risk to healthcare workers and public health workers here in the United States in 2020. I remember back in spring of 2020, my best friend from residency called me one night and asked if I had N95 respirators available because there weren't enough in the hospital to go around. And I fortunately still had a box of N95 respirators. It must have been from a few months before when I was in the Congo for Ebola, when I had been given some of those. And so I was able to give them to her. But to me, it's just clear that these infectious diseases can carry surprises, can pack surprises that can absolutely overwhelm systems, even in a country with a lot of resources like the United States. And we need to work together. A health threat anywhere is a health threat everywhere, whether it's in South America, Asia, Africa, North America, Europe, wherever it is, we are all in this together, and we need to be investing more in public health.
Very powerful. That's very powerful and very true. I appreciate you bringing that to light. And again, want to really thank you as well for going right from, you know, working in the Ebola outbreak, Ebola in 2019 to transitioning to working with COVID in 2020. And you kind of went right from one to the other. So thank you for staying strong and hanging in there.
Well, you know, it's not it's not a surprise, quite honestly, right? So I joined CDC in 2012, and I focused on pox viruses and rabies, and then Ebola in West Africa occurred starting in around 2013 through 2016. But 2014 was a really bad year. From there, though, in 2016, there was Zika. And then in 2018, here in New York, we had a measles outbreak, which was the largest measles outbreak in the United States since 1992 that I, again, had the great privilege of helping to respond to. And then after measles, right, like I was dealing with Ebola again in DRC, in the Congo. And then COVID happened, right? So I'm giving you these series of events to make the point that we are, because of human activities, coupled with global travel, we are increasingly going to see outbreaks, epidemics, and pandemics. And we are all at risk. So we need to invest in prevention, specifically preventing spillover events by fixing our broken relationship with nature. And also we need to invest in preparing for pandemics when they occur. That means increasing our ability to respond to pandemics when they occur. You can't only invest in one or the other, because if you do, we're going to have a weak link and we're going to remain very vulnerable. And the threat is going to persist. So we have to invest in both. And sadly, you know, public health workers have been calling for decades for more investment in public health into both of these aspects of prevention and preparedness. But many of these calls have gone overlooked. Now, I am feeling more optimistic than I have in a long time because despite all the deaths that we've seen from COVID, at least now, at the highest levels of government, there are world leaders who are interested in fixing the failed global health architecture around pandemics. And so we have opportunities right now to fix the failures of the past, but that window of opportunity will close soon. We need to act now. We need to act quickly to implement the right changes. Otherwise, this is all going to repeat itself, sadly.
Yeah. And I think a lot of professionals have echoed that same sentiment that this is the time while COVID is fresh in everyone's mind, while people can understand firsthand the impacts that a global, pandemic like that caused and use that momentum to make those infrastructure changes. So I absolutely agree. And on that note, I want to ask if you have any advice for, people early in their careers who are starting out during this time, or people who are maybe wanting to get involved to put some of those changes in place.
Well, I would first of all say follow your purpose. You know, in my own case, I've been so lucky that I recognize that I've had a lot of privilege in my life, and it's easy for me to say this, and not everyone has those benefits. But I hope that everyone is able to follow their purpose, and life is going to have ups and downs. In my own case, though, I knew from a very early age that I wanted to do public health. My dad had smallpox as a kid. And whenever I'd look, well, my dad had smallpox when he was a kid, and growing up, myself, whenever I would look at his face, I would see the legacy that smallpox had left, because he was one of the fortunate survivors, but it left scars all over his face. And I learned early on about public health. And then I watched the movie Outbreak in the mid 90s. And I knew that I wanted to wear a space suit and chase dangerous diseases and join the CDC. Right. And I was able to pursue that path, but I also always wanted to do conservation. And I knew deep down that the two must be linked somehow. Human health and human well-being, I knew was connected to nature, keeping nature intact. And so it can take a long time to get where you ultimately want to be, but keep working hard and stay true to your mission and your purpose. And I think a lot of times things will work out, in a way, not for everyone. Right. And we have to think about, there's so much inequity in the world right now. And that there are structural barriers, including structural racism, that keep people from being able to fulfill their own dreams. But we all need to work together to make the world a better place. And I'm very, very lucky that I get to pursue my childhood dreams, and I get to work along the most amazing colleagues every day. Both from CDC and the New York City Health Department and public health in general, and in the environmental sector at Conservation International and so many other organizations that I get to work with. So I am beyond lucky, and I'm very grateful.
That's wonderful. And thank you so much. We're thankful that you found that link, you know, and have been able to emphasize that in your professional work and are now working this advocacy to fix these global infrastructures. And so we want to thank you again for joining us today and give you a moment here to recognize anyone that you'd like to that's helped you along the way. I know you've already recognized and honored some people, but just want to give you some additional space here.
I want to thank again the amazing colleagues that I get to work with every day at Conservation International and in the Preventing Pandemics at the Source Coalition. I want to thank the many healthcare workers and public health workers who are working tirelessly to keep all of us safe. And, you know, there's so many mentors I've had along the way who have helped me get where I am. You know, I couldn't have done this by myself, but I've had amazing mentors, and my family and friends have just been so incredible. So many people to thank. But remember, the issues that we face today in the world, from pandemics to climate change to loss of biodiversity, are issues that no single person or single institution can handle by themselves. And so we need to work together, and we need to be lifting everyone up. And I, again, I'm so grateful that I get to do this on a daily basis with so many wonderful people.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we wish you luck on your journey through One Health and pandemic prevention and doing the good work that you're doing.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate this opportunity.
Thank you.
To support the mission of One Health Wednesdays, please subscribe to the podcast on Apple or Spotify, and remember to leave a rating and review. You can find us on all social media channels and at onehealthwednesdays.com.